a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello, the night sky for July 2010. Well, I suppose there's something to be said for July, in that the nights are getting slightly longer. You haven't got to wait up quite so long for it to get dark. And of course, in the north of England and Scotland, it never gets totally dark at all at the end of June, around the summer solstice. But as July carries on, we'll see a bit more. If you're like me, you don't know the summer sky as well as the winter sky. And I was looking up just after sunset, quite late in fact, last night. And the first thing that you see is really surprisingly bright. And some of my colleagues didn't think it could be a star. They thought it might be a planet. It is in fact the star Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes. And after sunset, that's fairly high in the south. Just to the lower left of Bootes is a rather nice little arclet of stars. It's called the Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. And up to the left of that, we have a constellation, Hercules. I'm going to come back to Hercules in the highlights of the month. Below Hercules is a really rather blank area of sky called Ophiuchus. But the Milky Way goes through there, and in fact I've got another highlight later on in the Jodcast to mention. In fact, the Sun goes through Ophiuchus as well, so I suppose it ought to be one of the houses of the ecliptic, but would you want to be known as an Ophiuchan? I suspect not. Now, if you live to the south of England, or preferably if you're listening to us from across Europe, then below Ophiuchus is this lovely region of the sky around Scorpius and Sagittarius. If I look low down in the south in midsummer and it's really clear, I can fairly often see the lovely red star Antares in Scorpius. But sadly, from where I live, I don't see the teapot of Sagittarius, which is just to its left, very well. But if you do see that, and you imagine it as a teapot and water coming out of the spout, have a look with binoculars or a small telescope, follow the line of water out of the spout, or perhaps I should say tea, and you'll come to a rather lovely open cluster. There's a pair of them, they're called M6 and M7 in that region. They're very nice. And again, above the top of the teapot, just above the lid, there's a lovely bright region called the Lagoon Nebula. I think it's M8, and that's a lovely thing to look forward to as well. As you move across the sky towards the southeast, the bright star you'll see there is Vega in Lyra. Further over, and perhaps lower down early evening, is the star Deneb in Cygnus the Swan. And rising at about an hour, perhaps half an hour to sunset, you'll find Altair in Aquila the Eagle. Those three stars make up what is called the Summer Triangle, and it's a lovely region of sky to look at, both with binoculars, but also there's some very interesting telescope objects there as well. And if you go to the Night Sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, just put in Night Sky to Google, and you can actually track back through the months, and there are some details about most of the major constellations, and you can find what nice objects there are to look at. So, not a bad sky, actually, to see. Okay, let's now move on to the planets. And it's actually a good month for planets, surprisingly. We can see most of them, if you're prepared to get up early in the morning, see one or two. And Jupiter is one of the planets you need to get up early for, although, as we come to the end of July, it's actually rising soon after midnight, so it depends how late you like staying up. But in fact, before dawn, it's now relatively high in the southeast. And at minus 2.7 magnitudes, you can hardly miss it. Now, in fact, I want to encourage you to actually go out and have a look at it, because it's lost one of its major features. The South Equatorial Belt, one of two dark bands that you see on either side of the equator, has gone. Quite where? We don't know. Probably will come back before too long. But at the same time, the Great Red Spot has become more prominent. And that's partly because it sits in the same region, but it does seem to be more darkly coloured now, and it stands out a lot better than it has done for some years. So it is worth actually getting up to have a look at Jupiter, maybe something like, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock if you happen to wake up in the night and it's clear. Go out and have a look at Jupiter. It could well be worth it. Saturn, on the other hand, is now an evening object and visible just before sunset. And I'm going to come back to that in a couple of our highlights. but it's in the southwest after sunset. It lies on the western side, that's the lower left side of Virgo, which of course is itself down to the left of constellation Leo the Lion. It's best seen at the moment about an hour after sunset, magnitude of +1.1, so it's fairly bright. The angular size is about 17 arc seconds. That means a small telescope can see some details. The rings extend to about 38 arc seconds. In fact, the ring system is still not quite edge-on. It actually reached a minimum of 1.7 degrees to the line of sight, sort of late May, early June. It's now opening out, and in fact it reaches about 3 degrees angle to the line of sight by about the middle of the month. So it is beginning to open out, but still really pretty narrow. If you've got a small telescope, you'll easily pick up Titan. If you've got a 4 or 5 inch telescope, you might see another 3, an 8 inch telescope, perhaps another 1 or 2. So it is a lovely object to see, and you've just got a little bit of chance towards the early part and middle of this month. Mercury. That's also an evening object in mid-July. It will appear about 6 degrees above the horizon in the west-northwest about 30 minutes after sunset in the middle of the month. Magnitude -0.5, so binoculars should pick it up quite easily, but you do need to have a low western horizon. As you go through July, from the middle, it dims to magnitude +0.1, so it's about half as bright. Its size is only about 5 to 7 arc seconds. It does change during the month, so you don't really see anything on the surface. On the 27th of July, it actually passes 0.3 degrees. That's pretty close. South of Regulus in Leo. Again, we'll come back to some of these evening planets in a few minutes. Mars is still visible. Its magnitude is +1.4, gradually falling during the month. Again, it's in the southwest after sunset between Regulus in Leo and Spica in Virgo. It's down to the lower left of a star called Denebola, which is the tail of Leo the Lion. The angular size is now about 5 arc seconds, so you ain't going to see any details on the surface, but of course you might have access to the Hubble Space Telescope, in which case you probably could. And finally, Venus. Well, that's very, very prominent in the evening sky after sunset. I mean, you just can't miss it. It's the magnitude -4.1. It stays at that magnitude pretty well constantly, plus or minus a little bit. And that's because as it gets nearer to us, which is what's happening now, it's coming towards the Earth, the angular size is larger, and that compensates for the fact that the area that's illuminated by the sun is now reducing. The two things cancel out, so we have an almost constant brightness. I'll come back to that again in one of the highlights. So there we have the planets. So not a bad month for planets. And we're going to have a look at some nice groupings of those amongst the highlights I'm just going to talk about. So what about the possible highlights you might see given clear nights during July? Well, there's a nice skyscape in the early morning of July the 8th, so you've got to get up before dawn, I'm afraid. The moon, in fact, is quite close to the Pleiades cluster, and the moon is a very thin crescent at that time, so you might even see some earthshine. That is, the part of the moon that's not brightly illuminated, you may see illuminated by reflected light from the clouds on the Earth. Now, because the fact the moon is there, its light will basically mean you won't see the scattered light. All of the stars in the Pleiades cluster, which is just to the left of it, just a few degrees away, but you should see with binoculars a fair number of the brightest ones. That could be quite nice to actually see. I'm trying to introduce a little section where the highlight's going to be illustrated by an image taken by schools using the 2-meter Fox telescopes, one of the two Australia or Hawaii. And this month I've chosen the globular cluster M13, which is in Hercules. The heart of Hercules has what's called a keystone, 4 stars making a sort of rather open rectangle in a way, wider at the top than at the bottom, hence the name keystone. If you follow with binoculars or a telescope up the right-hand side of the keystone, you'll come to a little fuzzy ball, and that is M13. It is the brightest and the best globular cluster that we can actually see in the northern hemisphere. Again, if you go on the night sky site or put in astronomical A-list into Google, there's a list of the best objects, the 50 best objects in the night sky that I wrote about a few years ago. It will give you a lot of details. Globular clusters are relatively small spherical concentrations of stars, perhaps a million or so in each one. They were born at the same time as our galaxy, and they lie in what's called the galactic halo, a sort of a sphere surrounding the center of our galaxy. By measuring the distances to them and their directions, Howard Shapley was able to plot out the positions of all of these globular clusters, those he could see. And it was obvious that they did have a spherical distribution, the center of which seemed very logically to be the center of our galaxy, which of course we can't see in visual light. So from that, he was able to work out how far away the Sun is from the center of the galaxy, about 27,000 light years. On July the 15th, after sunset, there's quite a nice lineup of the planets, Saturn, Mars, and Venus. And in fact, I think you'll see the Moon just below and to the lower right. So that would be quite nice to see. Saturn's up to the left, Mars in the middle, Venus to the lower right. And if you've got a good low horizon, I think you'll see a very thin crescent moon just below Mars. That would be nice. Again, something a bit new, I want to point out some things you can see on the Moon. And the objects I've chosen this month, you can see with binoculars as well. Two great lunar craters, Tycho and Copernicus. Around the 20th of July, the Terminator is running quite close to both of them, meaning they're sharp very well. Tycho is towards the bottom of the Moon in a very densely cratered area called the Southern Lunar Highlands. It's quite young, it's about 108 million years old. It's thought, in fact, to be formed by the impact of the remnants of a giant asteroid that broke up. One of them is still there, it's called Baptistina, but another one, it is thought, was the cause of the Chicxulub crater 65 million years ago that may well have been linked to the demise of the dinosaurs. Anyway, Tycho's got a diameter of 85 kilometres, which is why you can see it with binoculars, nearly 5 kilometres deep. At full moon, you see some distinct rays emanating from Tycho that stretch around the surface, and this is debris that was blasted out when Tycho was formed by the impact of quite a large asteroid. Now, in contrast, Copernicus is 800 million years old. It lies in the eastern part of Oceanus Procellarum, higher up, just beyond the end of the Apennine Mountains. You'll see them curving around, very obviously around the 20th of July. Go out a bit into the Oceanus and you'll see Copernicus. It's a bit bigger, 93 kilometres wide, and it's about 4 kilometres deep. It's a classic terraced crater. If you look at photographs of it or look at it with an optical telescope, you can actually see that there aren't steep sides. They come down in a form of terraces. You can, in July, spot a dwarf planet. Ceres is the largest of the asteroids or minor planets in the asteroid belt. Because it's large enough to have become spherical, it's actually now classed as a dwarf planet. It's actually in the lower part of Ophiuchus, so it's sort of in the region of the Milky Way, which would in general make it very hard to spot. But in fact, this month, it's passing in front of a dark cloud of dust and gas, which hides most of the stars that lie beyond in that direction. That's called Barnard 78. If you look below the star Theta Ophiuchi, then you've got a chance to find the seventh magnitude dwarf planet Ceres. Now, you need a chart for that, and I've put one on the night sky page you can have a look at. Finally, at the very end of the month, July the 31st, Mars and Saturn are quite close together, and they're up to the left of Venus. So you've got quite a nice little grouping. Tight grouping, Mars and Saturn. Lower down to the right, you'll see Venus. So again, with a good low horizon, quite a nice skyscape to see. We don't often mention the outer planets, Neptune and Uranus, but Uranus, in fact, is about 5.8 magnitudes, so it's not all that faint. Theoretically, you could see it with your unaided eye under very dark skies, but with binoculars, it's not that difficult if you know where to look. And this month, it's dead easy. All you have to do is to find Jupiter. Put Jupiter towards the left of the field of view of your binoculars, and over to the right, you'll see two objects about sixth magnitude. The nearer one to Jupiter is just a star, but the right-hand one is Uranus. Now, throughout the month, the separation of Uranus and the star won't really change much because Uranus doesn't move through the heavens very quickly, but you will see Jupiter moving away towards the left. So, a nice chance to have a look at Uranus. If you've got a small telescope, you can see it's got this rather lovely turquoise little disc. Very pretty object to see. Well, good hunting. At least the nights are getting longer.
So that was what you could see in the Northern Hemisphere, but here is the Carter Observatory in New Zealand to tell us what you can see in the Southern night sky.
Coming to you from the Carter Observatory in Wellington, Aotearoa, New Zealand. My name is John Field and I will be describing some of the highlights in our Southern night sky. Looking south and high up in our winter sky, we find the Southern Cross or Crux, and to the left of Crux, the two pointer stars. Crux is probably the most famous of the seven constellations and is also the smallest of the 88 official constellations in the night sky. The Cross consists of three bright stars and two fainter stars and was originally part of the Centaur, but by 400 AD these stars were no longer visible from Greece and were rediscovered and made into the shape of the Cross in 1501. The Southern Cross is visible from the lower latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere. To those living in the Southern Hemisphere, though, they could still see the Southern Cross, but they make different shapes out of these stars. To Māori and Aotearoa, it is known as Tupunga, the anchor. To the Australian Aboriginals, the pointers were seen as two silver-crested cockatoos flying toward the Tree of Life, represented by the cross. The fifth star in the cross is seen as a possum hiding in the tree. The New Zealand flag has only four stars. This is because possums aren't welcome here in Aotearoa. The brightest star of the Southern Cross is a lovely double star, easily seen in a small telescope. And Beta Crucis has a deep crimson carbon star nearby that makes a lovely pairing. Near to Beta Crucis is the Jewel Box Cluster, visible as a haze to the unaided eye, and first telescopically observed by John Herschel. This makes a fine sight in binoculars or a small telescope. The Southern Cross can be used to find south by projecting an imaginary line along the length of the cross and across the sky to the bright star Achernar. The halfway point along this line is close to the South Celestial Pole. The South Celestial Pole is the point around which the stars rotate in the Southern Hemisphere and is overhead at Earth's South Pole. Dropping this halfway point down to the horizon will give you due south. About halfway from the South Celestial Pole to Achernar can be seen two hazy patches in the night sky. Known as the Magellanic Clouds, both of these objects can be seen on a moonless night with a reasonably dark sky. Also, like the Southern Cross, they can be seen from the lower latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere, but they are best seen here in the south. Sighted during the 1519 to 1522 circumnavigation by the Portuguese explorers, the large cloud is the closest at 160,000 light-years away and is about 14,000 light-years in length. The smaller cloud is about 200,000 light-years away and about 7,000 light-years in length. Both of these galaxies are interacting not only with each other but also with our Milky Way galaxy. The large cloud shows a barred structure and has a large number of star clusters and emission nebulae. The most famous nebula in the LMC is the Tarantula, which can be seen as a bright knot to one side. Through a smaller telescope, the tarantula shape can be easily recognized. The nebula has an estimated mass of 450,000 times that of our star, the Sun, and may eventually form into a globular cluster. This nebula is the most active region of star birth known in our local cluster of galaxies, and if this nebula was at the same distance as the Orion Nebula, it would cast shadows here on the Earth. At the centre of the nebula is a compact cluster of stars known as R136. This cluster has a large number of giant and supergiant stars. It was near the Tarantula in 1987, the brightest supernova since the invention of the telescope occurred. Independently discovered by astronomers in Chile and here in New Zealand by Albert Jones on the 24th of February 1987. Being in a nearby galaxy, it was possible to discover, by studying previous images of the area, which star went supernova? Surprisingly, the star detected was not a previous candidate for a supernova, and it appears that this star may in fact be a binary system that merged 20,000 years ago. Looking towards the northern horizon and stretching towards zenith from east to west, we find the planets Venus, Mars, and Saturn. Venus will be close to the star Regulus on the 10th of July. Mars and Saturn move slowly close together, and Mars will move from the constellation of Leo to Virgo, and by the end of July they'll be very close together in the nighttime sky. Jupiter is best seen in the morning sky, but rises by about 10 p.m. by the end of the month. Along our southern horizon before sunrise, we find the Milky Way stretching from east to west, with a spectacular centre of the galaxy just above our southern horizon. From the latitude of the Blue Mountains in Australia, the Milky Way forms a perfect ring around the horizon, and this spectacularly shows off the disk structure of our own Milky Way galaxy. Thank you very much for listening to our podcast from Wellington. We hope you have the opportunity to go out and see some stars, not only in the southern hemisphere, but in the north as well.